Hi there, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page, all things Cheltenham reviewed in this week's edition with myself, Lee Mottishead, and my Racing Post colleagues, Maddie Playle and Paul Keeley. Just quickly, just to highlight that they are well worthy of their place on this programme. Maddie, you back Golden Ace from the Champion Hurdle at what price?
100-1.
100-1. Keels, you had a rather good week. Your main winners were?
Yeah, my main winner was Meyer Town. I backed to 28-1. I can't quite match Maddie's hundreds.
That was jammy.
Jimmy Desai and Jazzy Matty. Real good start to the week. Wasn't so good in the second half. Game of 2 hours. Supposed to be football, that, isn't it? But it was racing for me.
I am surrounded by genius. And a very, very, a very smart performer, genius or not, won the Cheltenham Gold Cup on Friday. We'll start by talking about the chases. The Gold Cup is the greatest race at the festival, so the greatest steeplechase race. I know the way you're thinking, Maddie. He was a really worthy winner and a very good winner of a Gold Cup that we thought was going to give us a three-time Cheltenham Gold Cup winner. Instead, it maybe gave us the first Gold Cup Grand National winner in the same season since 1934.
Yes, obviously the race was built around Galopin de Champs going for the hat-trick. And I think whenever something like that happens and whenever there's such an anticipation behind one horse and one result, the winner, arguably in this case, it just doesn't quite get the credit they deserve, which is understandable. But I think this was a monstrous performance in reality. Admittedly, Galopin de Champs didn't seem to be travelling with his usual zest, and Paul Townend said he didn't perhaps jump as well as he can do, but maybe it was the ground being a bit quick. Maybe it was just that, you know, he can't produce a race post rating of nearly 180 every single time, which not many horses can do that in one run, let alone throughout a season or throughout a career like he's done. But I thought I Know the Way You're Thinking was very, very good. And we have to bear in mind, he won the Kim Muir the year before, but he's still quite an unexposed horse in these sort of contests. I think if he were to run in the Grand National, I think surely he would win it easily, providing he gets round. But we know that the National these days is a much easier test than it once was. He's just a tremendous talent.
I was watching the race up in towards the top of the grandstand, and the guy I was stood next to, we both said after a mile or so that Galopin just wasn't travelling. He wasn't in a rhythm. Did you sense quite early doors?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, I mean, I got out of Cheltenham first thing in the morning, Friday morning, left at 4:10 where we were staying so I could get home.
4:10?
Go and watch it with the lads in the club. And we were all saying, this horse isn't going well.
No.
Like, you know, even before halfway.
Yeah.
He didn't look as happy. Maybe it is a ground thing. It was the fastest ground he's been in a Cheltenham Gold Cup for. But also, it's hard to know what to make out of I Know the Way You're Thinking, isn't it? Because he doesn't have the profile of a Galopin de Champs who wins nearly every time he turns up. That was only the third chase win of his life.
Yeah.
And he hasn't won a single time this season, although he was a monster eye-catcher in Ireland. I remember doing a review after the Dublin Racing Festival, and I said, make no mistake, I know your way of thinking, we'll finish second to Galopin de Champs in the Gold Cup, and then suddenly I was told, hang on, he's not even in it. What I mean? So, you know, they had to supplement him. He jumped the second last really slowly, and then he absolutely roared home.
He did, didn't he? Yeah. Just as he did in the Kim Muir last year.
Just as he did in the Kim Muir. So we know he's got, you know, stamina to burn. What they do with him next is fascinating.
What would
it?
You do with him?
Oh, I was, the Grand National is way easier to win than it used to be.
And now
for that sort of horse, it's much easier to jump. I mean, you know, I am Maximus by standards of chase. He's not a very good jumper, and he still won the Grand National very easily last year.
Yeah.
These horses are going to go in there, you know, officially better handicapped than him when he gets there.
He's probably never going to get a better shot at it, is he?
Well, he's off 1.6, isn't he? So he's only, I think he's down to only carry £3 more than his stable companion Stumptown, the cross country winner.
Yeah, so let's say he's off 160.
And he'll probably
He got a Racing Post rating of 182. So we're talking, so I'm going to guess 176.
Yeah.
Yeah, our chase rankings all tend to be a fair bit higher. So yeah, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be more than a stone well in, isn't he? But do they want to do it? Did he have a hard race at Cheltenham?
I don't think he did.
It's not easy. I mean, it was the last goal. I mean, obviously, the last JP McManus Gold Cup runner was Synchronised, who lost his life at the course. Yeah. Garrison Zavanna went really close.
Yeah. Master Oates tried it.
He
had like My Will or something run the Gold Cup, then running a Grand National.
Yeah, he didn't win a Gold
like
Cup.
That.
I was just talking about Gold Cup winners. Like, you know, so Garrison Zavanna
won the Gold
Cup
often.
And then shot clear on a run and then got pegged back again, didn't he? So it's not easy, but it'll never be easier for a Gold Cup winner, I don't think, given the rating he had when he went into the Gold Cup.
And if this horse is ever going to go for Grand National, we surely have to be this year. I guess also, though.
But do you suddenly realise, hang on, we didn't realise he was as good as he was, and now we want to protect him because he's seven.
Run him as a Gold Cup horse.
What's to stop running him as a Gold Cup horse next year and the year after? Who's to say in 2 years' time we've got another horse going for...
Going for
the treble, because he's only young. He's only had running 10 chase outings in his life.
Well, that's it. So, and on that one then, so just putting the Grand National one as well, but JP McManus has also got last year's winner, Iron Maximus. He's got Oroco. So he has got fantasy
contenders
in the race.
Yes, he's got other contenders. And, you know, who's to say that, hang on a minute, I know where you're thinking, he's done, you know, he's already won two chases at Cheltenham Festival and he's only seven. He might be, he might actually be a superstar. So,
would you run him though? If you owned him,
I'm a gambler, aren't I?
I think I would.
Probably.
And if he runs, what price will he be?
5-2.
Really? Isn't that amazing?
What price did Tiger Roll go off at? What price Tiger Roll went off at.
Answer on a postcard.
Without looking. I'll have a sneak look when you and Maddie are talking. And I'll let you
know. Well, Maddie, we should have a little conversation for a second. Different question then. If I know the way you're thinking and Galopin Deschamps turn up in the Gold Cup next season, so Galopin would be 10?
10.
I know the way you think it would be 8. Let's say...
Factor file
as well, yeah. Let's say we get good to soft ground, that's more like soft ground, or we get soft. We get ground more like last year than this year. Who will win the race?
I'd still be a fan of I Know the Way You're Thinking, even too. Over Factor File, because I think Factor File is so exuberant and... I think he could well stay the Gold Cup trip, but we have to still take that on trust a little bit at the moment. I think he bossed the Ryanair, if we're honest. That's not to say he can't boss Gold Cup. Galopin Deschamps, I just think age may be catching up with him at that point. It's hard for a horse to be so consistently brilliant, and he has been. You know, just because he's not won 3 Gold Cups, he's achieved an incredible amount this season, and he is an incredible racehorse. But I think... The way I know the way you're thinking ran up the hill after the last fence, I don't think he had a hard race at all. I think, like you've said, if they want to protect him, if they want to look after him, then that's fine. And I think he could well do it again. But I don't think he found that particularly difficult. I do think it was probably not the strongest, the deepest Gold Cup we've ever seen. And I don't think Galopin Deschamps was at his best, but I still think, as the ratings would tell you, it was a mega performance.
Yeah. What do you make of Factor File?
It just looked like a completely different horse than he looked all season. To me, he hadn't threatened to do that at all.
Yeah.
And then he completely tore them apart. Now, I don't know, you know, maybe he wasn't right earlier in the season, but, you know, you'd certainly be tempted to say, right, let's have another go at the Gold Cup, let's have another go at 3 Mile next year. It is 5.5 furlongs further, of course, a Gold Cup trip. And if they've got I Know the Way You're Thinking in it, going for the double, they might not need him. That's the only other thing for anti-post punters. You've got to work that out.
Just looking here, Tiger Roll in 2019, the year when his second national, was 4-1 favourite. So if he was 4-1 favourite, would you be pretty confident that I Know the Way You're Thinking would be a fair bit less?
It'd be short, no. I wouldn't want to lay 4-1, would you?
No, not at all.
Horses just won a Gold Cup like that, running off a mark of 160. I wouldn't want to lay 4-1.
No, I'd agree. And here's that question I asked Maddie. If Factor File, Another Way Thinking, and Galopin turn up in next year's Gold Cup on soft ground, who wins it?
I go with the stamina and the youngster. So it's I Know the Way You're Thinking.
Clean sweep. So we've already decided that I Know the Way You're Thinking wins next year's Cheltenham Gold Cup. Will Marine National win next year's champion chase?
He might do.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Who knows how lucky he was, or was he lucky at all? We don't know. I mean, I suppose, you know, Aidan Coleman said on one of the shows, "You're not lucky. If you're not unlucky, if you make a mistake, they're there to be jumped."
Yeah.
John Bond somehow still managed to finish second, and he had absolutely zero chance of getting anywhere near second at one point.
And how close was Quilixios? I mean, that gives you a bit of a barrier on the form, doesn't it?
That makes you worry about it. I think Marine National would have won by 6 or 7 anyway. I think he was about to go clear, and he looked very strong at the line. He looked very good. He travelled well. He jumped well. John Bond's frailties at Cheltenham.
Yeah, so
He's 14 from 14 away from Cheltenham. He's now 2 from 6 at Cheltenham.
But like different points around. I mean, Keith Melrose in pieces before and after the Champion Chase, his view was that you can't really say he's got a thing about Cheltenham. He laid out evidence why he believes that the case.
Well, you can.
Plenty of people say the opposite.
You can. I mean, I don't understand what more evidence you need. He's 14 from 14, unbeaten and unbeatable so far.
Yeah.
It doesn't even look like losing.
Yeah.
And he's now 2 from 6. Mm. Right, he makes mistakes there. Now, Aidan Coleman said on one of our shows that he says he's very straight-backed.
Fascinating.
And he struggles to jump there. Well, and of course, if you go in a Champion Chase, it's probably the one race where you're going faster than any other 2 mile race of the season, especially when the ground's quick.
Yeah.
Then you're more likely to get found out. And found out he got.
Yeah.
As simple as that. He didn't jump well enough to win. And we showed what remarkable ability he's got to finish second, given where he was. I mean, I thought Nico was going to pull him up at one stage.
Yeah.
You know, he is a horse with tremendous ability, and maybe one day he'll get it right, but he probably won't because he'll be 10 next year.
Yeah.
And we'll have Sergino coming through, and possibly Majbra.
Yes.
You know, he obviously needs a discussion soon anyway. But yeah, how good was Marine Nationale? Don't know. But I certainly wouldn't rule him out, because he did, at the end of the day, won the race easy, and he did the job that all the others couldn't do. He got round without making a horrendous error, and he's a two-time Cheltenham Festival winner himself.
Just incredible how short price favourites just haven't won the Champion Chase, barring, I think, one of Altior's and maybe one other. So many of them. Is it 7 or some favourites in the last 11 years?
I was writing the setup piece for Wednesday's edition, and just the number in a concentrated period of time that have blown out. Horses as short as 2 to 9. And JP's colours have been carried by David Assoy, who was another one who'd...
I think maybe it was a bit of a perfect storm for Marie Nationale. And I don't want to discredit him, because you're right. Like with Golden Ace, you've got to jump them.
It's a little bit unlucky. It's a little bit unlucky. You've got to... Oh, obviously you've got to jump. Mm. But, I mean, Defi Desai wasn't right. It's nothing to do with jumping.
Yeah.
Shiskin wasn't right. It was nothing to do with jumping. Duvan broke down.
Yeah. Alfabiolo was jumping.
Alfabiolo was jumping, yeah. And obviously Jonbon was jumping. But it's not all because of jumping. Some things the horses have got wrong. It's a bit of a, you know, it's just a statistical blip, I think, that so many have got beat.
Just in a wider sense, both of you, so many odds on favourites got beat during the week, and I think historically, if you look at the number of odds on favourites that get beat at the Cheltenham Festival, it's relatively high. Would that shape your thinking at future festivals?
It always shapes my thinking. Yeah. I mean, I did a handful, but not even a handful of preview nights this year, and the first thing I said was, look, I know you've all got your theories over who your bankers are. Let me promise you, not all of them will win, because they never do. And there's probably multiple reasons for that. But I say, right, first of all, every single horse is trained to the minute. Absolutely every single horse. They know themselves it's something different. You've got a big atmosphere, right? The jockeys are, their adrenaline is up and running. And you're not telling me horses don't all feel that, because they're flight animals. They rely on the nerves of literally other horses. So are they getting any of that from the crowd? Everything is up. You know what I mean? Yeah. They know Cheltenham's different. Right, because it's different for everybody, and I think sometimes it gets to some of them. It certainly gets to the jockeys. They might make a slightly wrong decision at a wrong time. So it's the most important. When the stakes are the highest, mistakes can happen, can't they? It's as simple as that, and I think that's the case. And it's a good job that the mantra that's been popular over the last couple of seasons, Mullins doesn't miss, has proved wide of the mark, because if he hadn't have had 4 short price losers this week, he'd have had half the winners of the whole meeting. Well, but he's had now, since 2019, he's had 23 odds on shots, and 11 of them have lost. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so it happens to everybody.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Nothing is bomb-proof. The one thing I don't do now is I do not get involved in any of them at short prices. I did it years ago. I think the last short price one I backed was Size of Europe in the Champion Chase, when he got chinned by
Finian's Rainbow.
And I haven't touched a short price favourite since. And I won't do it, because I don't see the point. I don't need the money enough to have a, you know, I don't need a big chunk of money to risk a big chunk of money. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I don't see
the point of it. I don't get fun out of it. I'll stick to back in handicappers at 10 and 12 and 16 to 1, etc. It's more fun to me. And I'm not going to get in any trouble for doing that. I mean, God knows what some people did there.
Reference Mullins and odds-on favourites. Looking at the novices, so Majbrough would have won the Arkle, but for those two mistakes,
wouldn't he'd have won it off the track, wouldn't he? He was miles better than all of them.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any doubt about that whatsoever. But again, you've got to jump him, haven't you? There were worries from Leopardstown,
absolutely,
about the way he jumped. And the thing was, I mean, the race IQ data was saying, yeah, he was making lengths. Right, he was making lengths, but he was also getting low. Yeah. Like, you know, and funnily enough, it wasn't getting low that caught him out this time. Really, it was coming down on top of one, wasn't it? Mm. Like, you know what I mean? It's strange, but he's, you know, he's not your absolutely foot perfect.
Not necessarily a natural, is he?
Was he? Yeah. I mean, he gets from one side to the other. He gets it quickly, and he's not afraid of them. But he's got mistakes in him for sure. I mean, he can brush that up and be a real threat next year.
Just thought about another Mullins novice. I thought Nico de Boinville gave Django Bay a fantastic ride.
I thought he was brilliant all week, actually.
Yeah, he didn't chase things when he could see that his mount was out of pace.
That's it. The one horse that was ridden to beat Majbrough was Load of Stud.
Yeah.
And I think if he'd have been given a quieter ride, he might have ended up winning.
Yeah.
But he was probably the one horse going into the race where they actually thought we could, where others were trying to
pick up the pieces,
whereas he was trying to win. So I wouldn't hold that against Harry Skelton. It just happened to be how it was. Suddenly he found himself in front way too soon.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then just didn't quite have it. I mean, he's only been beaten a length or so, isn't he? Like, you know.
So what about the other one, Maddie? Ballyburn. I mean, what do you do with Ballyburn? I, again, watching that, I know he carries his head low. And I said to William Mullins after the race, he carries his head low. And he said, well, he always carries his head low. But it just seemed to me that even by Ballyburn stats, he was practically
having
the grass.
Having a munch of the grass, wasn't he?
Was going around.
Difficult ride. Yeah. Keels has touched upon it when we're off air. Just don't think he is a good enough jumper at that speed. He wants to go fast. He's a positive, exuberant horse who can run very fast, but the fences slow him down and he just doesn't jump them as cleanly as he needs to. I'm with you. I think they should revert to hurdles. I think he could be a top staying horse if they teach him to settle. But he's a bit of a conundrum, isn't he?
Yeah. You've ticked him already, haven't you?
I have. I mean, the thing is, the stayers, I mean, for me, the stayers hurdle's there for the taking, obviously. I mean, it's one by the 10-year-old Bob Ollinger, great to see. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you've got an old horse winning the stayers. None of the young horses came up to scratch.
Yeah.
So it is there for the taking, isn't it? Because nobody wants to win the stayers hurdle, do they, at the end of the day?
No one sets out to win the stayers hurdle.
But so I'd imagine they'd give Ballyburn another go. But like Maddie says, I think he's one of those horses, he wants to run too fast for his ability to jump the fences. Mm. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? If he could settle and go slower, he may be able to get away with it. But he just wants to get on with it. I mean, you've seen how keen he was. He was almost taking a pick of grass in the first few races. And, you know, if you jump like that, you don't win. Again, he's performed miracles to finish where he did. There's no doubt that he did stay. Because he finished so close despite the number of mistakes he made.
Yeah.
But, you know, until you get rid of all of those, you're not going to be top class.
And is Leckie Watson a horse with genuine Gold Cup aspirations? Is he good enough for Gold Cup, Maddie? And again, this was one of yours, wasn't it? Well, Leckie Watson.
Another one of yours? Yeah, I was probably the only person shouting him home at one stage. Why not? You know, I know people can be quite cold on the bare form, and I don't think they were a vintage group of horses.
Yeah.
But why not? You know, we've seen how, I know the way you're thinking, it's come from a handicap, from a Kim Muir to be a bona fide Gold Cup horse, and I think he's probably not the most straightforward Leckie Watson, but I think he was really idling in the closing stages. I think he was probably value for more, went for a bit of a walkabout on the track and wanted some company, but you've got to at least treat him like one until he proves that he isn't, and he hasn't yet proved that he isn't up to that.
Keels?
The beauty of jump racing is that you never know where the next superstar is going to come from. Yeah. Albin Ferro won 2 Gold Cups, remember, and he lay winded on the floor, two fences out, tailed off behind Presenting Percy.
Right.
Yeah, in the old RSA, Brown Advisory, or whatever it was. Nobody had him down as a single Gold Cup winner, let alone a dual Gold Cup winner. But then, you know, he's a young horse, he improved, and that's what happens. Like, so, you know, although you might say he's not an obvious Gold Cup horse, given that we've still got galloping, we've got Factor Fire, I know the way you're thinking. These horses have a habit of coming through, and if it's not him, it might be one of the others.
Well, in terms of that, before we move on to the hurdlers, any other names to take forward for punters from the chase races at the first? Anything else that you saw and you thought, well, that's maybe one to look at in the future?
Well, I absolutely love Mayertown, obviously.
Yeah, thought he was impressive.
Yeah.
Well, he was absolutely thrown in. It really annoyed me. The skews kept going on about Whistle Stop Tour. And I said to Tom Skew at a preview night the Thursday before the show, I said, what are you on about? This did Mayertown's a miles better horse and he's getting weight. Like, you know, and they wouldn't say they were committed. I gather it was the owners who wanted to run because they were going to go to that that race at Utoxeter.
And
obviously he got in. And to be fair, I think Gordon Elliott said Conflated was going to go for the Ultima, which would have left him out of the handicap. Yeah. Not that it would have made any difference, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a very good horse. You can see him as being a Grand National horse for the future. You could also see him coming back and doing what Colwack Rambler did. Next year before going on to the National, can't you? I mean, he jumped like a stag and he really, you know, he just had a different change of gear. But obviously he was only winning off a mark in the 120s.
You give him £10 though, he still would have won that race.
I think he'd have still won it easily as well.
It was quite similar to Caldwell Potter.
I was going to mention him,
got on the lead and
he was great.
Typical Harry Cobden ride, you think. Yeah. What will he go up now? Will they be looking at the Paddy Power first stop next season, maybe? That sort of route.
Loved the track, didn't he?
Yeah, just got in a great rhythm. I think for me that was one of the most refreshing things.
Will they not stick him in the Grade One at Aintree?
You think it's a manifesto?
Maybe they will.
You've
go that way.
I think so, because he's going to go up 10 for that, isn't he? Probably.
I don't think you can win that easy and have a relatively hard race, but he wasn't pressed hard, was he?
No, it wasn't. No. It was a very ready win. He suddenly came to life. I remember Paul Nichols saying that could have done with a bit of softer ground. But it's amazing how many of these horses prove you wrong and they just bounce off it. I mean, you'd never have any qualms about running him on good or soft ground again, would you?
Well, no. They said he's a tricky horse because they can't get his feet right. He's very difficult with his feet. Yeah.
Well, that's an issue. You might have bad feet but need that ground.
Yeah.
Which makes it hard.
Maybe.
But
anything else?
He looked good. I wouldn't give up on Primoz because he lost it at the start. Stupid false start. There was a load of money for that, just like there was Mayertown. There was talk at the track that Lucinda Russell had put all her odours on it, and she did call it before, after his Kelso win. This is one of the most talented horses I've dealt with, and he's only running off a mark of 130. So he wanted to make the running. He ended up second last when they finally set off, so he had no chance from there. So keep an eye on him.
Keels has revealed who he's put up, because after the festival every year, we have to put up our horse for next year.
Yeah.
Myself and Robbie had a very interesting conversation yesterday. I put up Django Bay at 16s for the Ryanair, just because I think, as we all saw plainly, that 2 miles is not his trip.
It's not 2 miles.
But Robbie thought 40-1 for the Gold Cup, and I don't disagree with that either. Think he could be one of those potential improvers that just comes out of the woodwork, even though he's an Arkle winner. He's definitely a stayer. I'm happy with my position on the Ryanair 16-1. I think that's a very good price, okay. But Could be one to surprise in a Gold Cup.
And just checking, neither of you wants to put up Mr. Coffee as an eye catcher.
Oh, Mr. Coffee.
No, because he's bound to win, right?
Put up Vanilla after he nearly took the wrong course.
He did, yeah. And doesn't that show, again, with Cheltenham, how things can turn? Sean Flanagan almost takes the wrong course on Vanilla. Yeah. The race later, he wins the Champion Chase. And actually, we should say as well, of course, hugely emotional day that was, particularly with the Champion Chase with Marie Nacional and Michael O'Sullivan.
Jazzy Matty afterwards.
Yeah, it's
incredible.
Yeah, it really was. That then was our discussion about the chases at the Cheltenham Festival. When we come back, we'll be looking at the hurdlers. Welcome back to part two of The Front Page, talking all things Cheltenham 2025. It started on the Tuesday and the big race on that day was just about the wackiest Maddie Cheltenham Festival race and so the wackiest champion hurdle you'll ever see. Congratulations again with Golden Ace, 100-1.
I cannot pretend to be particularly shrewd because so much luck was involved. I'm not going to sit here and give myself a pat on the back because, frankly, I think I was very, very jammy. And obviously, I think Constitution Hill would have won if he'd have stood up. I think State Man would have won if he'd have stood up. I think Lossy Mouth would have won if she'd have run in the race. But I was a very lucky girl.
But you get paid out all the same. And although you were lucky, she still ran a, you know, a really... I mean,
she's a wonderful mare.
Yeah, she's super mare. Keels, what, like the rest of us, when you're watching that race, you must have been scratching your head.
Yeah, it's hard to know where to start, isn't it? It's like, no. And then suddenly brighter days ahead for going through the back. I thought, what's going on here? Next week, State Man's going to win it then. And then, you know what I mean? I thought Burdett Road might come and catch Golden Ace for a brief minute then, because he looked like he was starting to motor.
But Southwest Davis was almost pushed out the saddle when Brighter Days Ahead veered to avoid State Man.
Absolutely. It was just mad. Although, you know, with Constitution Hill, I suppose you could say he's been threatening to do that for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I said to a guy...
I mean, it's just a case, he just takes off so quick, so early, doesn't he?
Even in that schooling video, his last schooling video that we tweeted out on the Racing Post, he flew it and it looks very impressive, but... If you're going to do that and have that approach and be as confident as you are, and there wasn't even a stride there. He just landed straight on top of the hurdle.
You know, maybe that'll teach him, because he looks like he just relishes doing it. He just actually enjoys I see, I'm going. Yeah. But, you know what I mean? And maybe that'll teach him a lesson and he'll be all right after that. But he had started to do that for a while and it just happened to happen.
And you know, the sad thing was, the great thing was he was fine.
Both of them.
Yes, absolutely. But Connection seemed adamant after as well as before, that he was as good as they'd ever had him going into that champion hurdle. So you just wonder what he might have done if Nico had been able to let him roll on down the hill. And
yeah, absolutely. He could have been, you know, we could have seen a massive performance, but it was so far out that we couldn't tell.
We wouldn't have seen a bad performance from State Man.
No, career best, maybe?
We would have seen State Man's probably best performance. I mean,
I'd written him off.
He relished the cheek pieces. He loved it. I mean, he'd never seen him travel so well, especially towards that stage of a race. And, he was going to win easily, wasn't he?
And everyone's saying, he's not a flashy horse. I mean, I do think Golden Ace would have got a bit closer the line, but he still would have won authoritatively,
The one thing he's done,
he?
He's always found plenty, even if he hasn't been quite right. So, he'd have won easy. Quite a days ahead is the one that, maybe she just wants soft ground.
She's just not run a race, has she?
She's just not run a race. Maybe...
Was she flattered at Leopardstown?
Maybe she was flattered at Leopardstown. I mean, all the time gurus say no.
Yeah.
They say that they think she injured herself early on in the race, and I think, you'd never know when. Maybe it happened at the last when she had to veer Jack Kennedy was
who knows?
Nearly thrown
who knows?
At the side.
I mean, it can't have been her running, because it was considerably worse than all her other runs, let alone that outlier.
Golden Ace would have confirmed the form.
Yes, but...
Is she just not a Cheltenham horse?
Yes, but she would have confirmed it by a long way rather than by a couple of lengths. Yeah, I mean, she might not be a Cheltenham horse anyway, but I don't think you can draw conclusions from that run.
No.
It was that bad.
And, Maddie, as Golden Ace's biggest fan, what would you do with her now?
Why not go to Punchestown? I mean, they've thrown the dice once. I mean, she'd have to be... I think, without being disrespectful to her, I think she'd have to be incredibly lucky to win... Again, against State Man and Constitution Hill, but why wouldn't you give it a go?
Would you jump a fence next season? Or would you save her hurdles?
Interesting, isn't it? Because she's by Golden Horn, who had a good festival, first and third in the Triumph, was it, as well? Who's going to be a real force to be reckoned with over the jumping game. Give it a go. School her at home, see how she does.
Well, giving it a go was the story of that race, because you had this weird situation where you had Ian Goldston, the owner of Golden Ace.
I probably owe him a beer, actually?
You might have too. Running in the champion hurdle because he thought his horse couldn't win the mare's hurdle because Lossy Mouth was in the mare's hurdle, and Lossy Mouth was in the mare's hurdle because her connection thought she couldn't win the champion hurdle, and yet Lossy Mouth in the mare's hurdle produced a bigger RPR than the mare who won the champion hurdle. So does that mean Lossy Mouth was in the wrong race and should have won the champion hurdle?
Well,
it's quite... It is quite plausible that Lossy Mouth would have won last year's as well, because State Man was so bad. I mean, she could be a dual champion hurdle, but there's the problem. That's the mare's race. The mare's race is the problem. It's there, and you cannot blame owners for going for a mare's championship race with a championship mare. Like, you know what I mean? It's that simple, and the race shouldn't be there.
Or it's there, it should be a grade two with penalties, maybe.
It shouldn't be a mayor's championship. I absolutely believe that the mayors should have their own championship, right? But if it's run at the Cheltenham Festival, then it takes away from other races. So why not run it another time? Now, I've said several times they should have a mayor's championship day on trials weekend in January, Make that a two-day meeting, be easy enough to fill
yeah.
with other mares races. And then whoever the champion is, they've got the choice then, 6 weeks later, to go for one of the big ones, whether it be a stayers hurdle yeah. or whether it be a champion hurdle. Now, I don't see why they can't do that. I really don't. It's such a simple thing to do. Then all the good horses can run against each other. I mean, we call it our Olympics, but, you know, in the actual Olympics, men don't compete against women. And women, you know, females can compete against the males in horse racing. Right? And if we're giving them opportunities to avoid each other, then they will, or yeah. at least some of them will. And it's as simple yeah. as that.
I suppose that if you're playing devil's advocate, you'd say that if you look at the huge number of high-class mares we've had in recent seasons, you know, your Annie Powers, your Honeysuckles, your Golden Aces, and loads more of that, just get to the top of my mind. They would say that it's because the mare's hurdle was created at the Cheltenham Festival, because of yeah, the lure of the Cheltenham Festival that's yeah, brought these mares in.
This is the whole point, right? There absolutely should be a mare's championship, right? But does it really lose any prestige if it is run on another day? And the answer should be no.
It yeah. should be no, but is it no?
And it's absolutely idiotic to yeah. think otherwise.
I suppose really the problem is we've seen again how desperate owners are to win at the Cheltenham Festival. And maybe...
above anything else.
Yeah, maybe if that race wasn't at the Cheltenham Festival, it wouldn't have had the allure that it's
Hey,
it's
listen,
had.
Right, if you have a mare's championship race and it's got a big enough pot...
Yeah.
All right. And you've got a mare good enough to run in it, they're running it.
Okay.
Right. Let's not beat around the bush here. They're running it. And it just shouldn't be there. It just should be there. It should be a 0 to 150.
And just fine before we move on, do you both agree that Lossy Mouth would have won the champion hurdle had she been in it?
Are we saying that Constitution Hill would have fell yeah. and State yeah. Man so still would have fell? Without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I think she's a better horse than Golden Ace, put yes. it that way. I did yeah. ask Joe Chambers okay. about this. He said, given our season, she'd have got brought down. So we're quite happy with where we are. So, you know, but, you know, I definitely believe that she should have been in the championship.
I think we should also say, Lossy Mouth had a howler of a fall at Leopardstown. State Man's had a howler of a fall at Cheltenham. Constitution Hill also was a pretty whack. We are lucky and thank goodness that yeah. all three of them are still sure. with us.
Yeah,
because that would yeah. have just been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the mood of that Tuesday would have completely changed yeah. had we something awful happened. In terms of shock outcomes, you don't expect a 100-1 shot who had just been dragged in from the field, who was favourite for the Cambridgeshire, who's actually running in the Triumph Hurdle as part of his preparation for Royal Ascot and then maybe the Melbourne Cup. You don't expect that sort of horse to win the Triumph Hurdle.
Bonkers, isn't it? I still can't really get my head around it. As a Lulamba supporter, I thought, and again, I thought Nico de Boinville, although it wasn't a winning ride, I thought it was absolutely brilliant on him. I think yeah. it's probably the best I've seen Nico ride across a week, and he just wasn't that fortunate with some of the results he got. But utterly mad whether they got racing a little bit too soon. But you look at where the horses came from. You know, Lulamba, East India Dock, even Hello Neighbour, they're all fairly prominent. And Poneros came from... he had to do a lot of running to come yeah. from his position that he was in. And he was a very talented horse on the flat. He jumped very well.
Yeah. I was on a big prices for the Cambridgeshire. I literally didn't even know he was running until he was getting
out on
the line.
Didn't know who he was, did you?
Like, you know
what I mean? Who's that?
What on earth is this? Like, you know,
amazing,
never run,
yeah.
never run in a hurdle race before. Comes through and win.
Plucked him out the field.
Yeah, well, I was actually in a boozer with somebody who backed it.
You're joking.
No. Yeah, £2 each way, and then he had £3 each way later on because he thought he'd forgotten to back it, so he did it twice. It was only a small punter. It was a name-only job. And yeah, he was very, very, very happy. Yeah, back in bonkers, isn't it?
And like, does the fact he could win that 100-1 first time out, does that change your view as to how good the juvenile crop is? Or is it just a case that a very good horse has just happened to win it on his third
day? He might just be a very good horse, doesn't he? See, the yeah. right horses were second and third, weren't they? We didn't actually know which order they would finish, but everybody expected them
yeah,
to be first
absolutely.
And second, generally.
It was a proper race as well.
It was the proper form horse, East India Dock, and the big gossip horse that Nicky Henderson is saying, like, you know, he might not be Sugino, but he's as good, you know, he's up there with all my other Triumph winners, and he's had seven.
Yep.
So they did finish first and second, and the horses come through and beat them. So yeah. there's no reason for it to be a fluke. We just hadn't seen him before, and he was yeah. on jockey bookings. God knows which number he was for Willie Mullins with Jonjo riding.
Yeah,
so
I think he was the eighth in the betting, was he, Willie Mullins?
Yeah.
And Jonjo was supposed to go to Doncaster, but then changed his mind to ride the horse.
I think it's proved as well that a lot of people were questioning Willie Mullins running that amount of hurdling debutantes in the Triumph. As far as I know, they were either pulled up or everyone came home okay, didn't they? There wasn't any of the fallers.
No, so one was sixth or seventh
as
well.
You have to go fair play, you know. Yeah. If you have these horses, you know, they're not no-hopers, are they, if they're winning? And some of the others ran promising races as well. And if no one else wants to run in the race, then why not run them?
Yeah, great Melbourne Cup trial. and what about the other novice performances? Who's a better horse, Copec de Bord or the New Line?
The New Line.
I think all three who finished first, second, third in the, what's it called?
Copec de Bord, the Yellow Clay, Final Demand.
I think they're all better than Copec de Bord.
I agree.
I think they're all very, very good. Now, they'll be doing different things, obviously, because Final Demand is going to be a staying chase without a shadow of a doubt.
The two winners might both be on the champion hurdle track. Copec and the New Line.
I think the New Line is very, very good. I know I was, you know, I was very sceptical of the form of both him and Final Demand.
Yeah.
Because I thought they might have won average poor races really well, which they probably still did, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they've come out and proved it by running really, really well. And I think the Yellow Clay is a very, very good horse. I mean, you know, it tells you how much that Gordon Elliott thought of the Yellow Clay, because he ran him there when he'd been a short price favourite for like 3 weeks in the run-up for the Albert Butler. Yeah. And he said, right, I'm still going to go on. And you've got to remember, he was a good third favourite. He's gone off second favourite in the end, I think, didn't he?
Yeah.
But he was a good third favourite in that race, and he still decided to go there. So that's how much he thinks of the Yellow Clay, who had beat Wingmen almost as far as Final Demand had, and proved he was right up to it. So, yeah, I take a very positive view of that form. I'm not sure what Copec de Bord needed to beat in this Supreme. Still does enough wrong for me.
He's not the finished article, is he? I mean, David Jennings asked me on one of the Good Morning shows we did, how good is Copec de Bord. I said he's good, and he could be very, 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 very good, but he's not there yet. He needs to jump slicker for me. He needs to be a bit more tractable. He needs to polish up his racecraft, which he may well do.
This is one thing they can learn an experience, or they can go the other way. I mean, do you remember Classical
Team?
He turned into a lunatic in his next season. Yeah. Mystical Power did the same this year. Okay, didn't win the Supreme last year, but he hasn't gone on, and he was like absolutely ridiculously keen when he ran in the fight in fifth.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what he does next year. They've got to settle him down.
But as a punter, you'd rather back the more complete horse who is doing things right, i.e. the New Line.
You back the horse that settles and takes in the prelims, in their stride.
I thought against a stayer, from the position that he came from, and he was short of room at one stage, wasn't he, the New Line? I thought the way he made up that ground, I think he was almost worth upgrading that performance, the acceleration he had to show to get himself out of a bit of bother.
Yeah.
And he jumped beautifully as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, very talented horse.
Bob Ollinger, fantastic. Back at the Cheltenham Festival, fourth win at Cheltenham, third win at the festival, given a dream ride by Rachel Blackmore, who just positioned him beautifully, settled him beautifully, and then pounced on Rob Corr's other runner, Tupu.
That was the story of the race for me. No discredit to Bob Ollinger, who is unbeaten at Cheltenham and unbeaten at the Cheltenham Festival, which
although
is
remarkable.
Although
he wouldn't have beaten Galopin de Shaw, had
he? Wouldn't, but as we found out last week,
you've got to jump.
But I thought it was the ride that won the race, if I'm honest. He is not the easiest horse to ride. I think Rachel knows him inside and out.
Yep.
I think the way that she stuck a target on Jack Kennedy's back and delivered him, still probably hit the front probably earlier than she wanted to.
Yeah,
I thought it was absolutely fabulous and great that a popular horse with such a storied career as him can enjoy another high moment at Cheltenham.
I think the owners would have got more kick out of that than they would have Tiapu winning.
Oh, massively said. I mean, he calls Bob Ollinger his third child, Brian Aitchison.
Much more of a kick out of it because, you know, he was the second coming a few years ago, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's one of, I was going to say, poor old DJ, one of several horses DJ's declared is going to win everything.
There's loads of them.
In his time at a racing post, and he certainly looked like he would for a while, didn't he? Didn't quite turn out like that, but he's come back, hasn't he? And he just does love Cheltenham, doesn't he? But it's a bang average race. I mean, I never, funnily enough, the one champion that I wanted to take on all week was Tiapu.
Yeah.
I got the wrong ones. I went for the younger horses instead of the older ones. he's actually run a fine race, Tia Poo, but he's just not that good, and especially not that good
on that ground.
On that ground, yeah. It's that simple. I doubt Bob Olinger would have stayed if it was last year's ground.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know, but he had ground in his favour, and he got the perfect waiting ride and just held on to enough of him, and just beat him with a bit more class than Tia Poo's actually got. Yeah. And I think that's it. At the end of the day,
well done for running them both. Against
absolutely,
each other.
Yeah,
you know, they could have waited for Aintree for
yeah,
Bob Aintree Olinger.
Hurdle, Liverpool hurdle.
Yeah, well done for running them both. Made a race a lot more interesting.
Any other names among the hurdlers that you'd be thinking, I want to write that one down, I want to be looking at that next time or next season?
Trying to think about who won the races. Like
Carcheesy in the county hurdle. You want Jimmy DeSoy in the Coral Cup. Jasmine DeVoe in the Albert Bartlett.
I think the Albert Bartlett is... on paper, it was probably one of the weakest ever run.
Yeah,
I'd be worried about. Yeah, I mean, it's normally the weakest, but you get potentially very good novice chasers in there. But I don't think many had shown that much.
No.
I mean, as I was saying, the Big Westerner went into its favourite and had a top RPR 133 going in, which is £20 below the 10-year average for the race.
Yeah.
So you know, I got the impression that a lot of trainers think, well, I don't really want to run one of my best horses in this because they always think without trace anyway, yeah, don't they? And it might have been a case of that with it this year. So none of them really for me. Jimmy DeSoy, I'm not sure he's much better than a handicapper. I mean, I would still think Absurd of a champion hurdle horse if they wanted to train him for hurdles, but they don't.
Yeah. He probably needed a run on that.
Yeah.
Well, he'd sort of said in advance he was better with a run behind him.
Yeah.
I think Cargis was well-positioned and well-ridden as well.
And the fact Townend got off Absurd to ride Cargis told you how much they
exactly, yeah. It was unfortunate for me because I was my big bet of the week, although we got in the frame, so.
Yeah, I was talking about you, big Absurd man. Okay, that's the hurdler sorted. When we return, we'll be looking at themes and issues arising from the festival. Welcome back to part three of The Front Page. We're going to close the show by looking at a few of the issues, the things, the narrative stories from 2025. Good week again to be Irish. 28.
Yes.
After day one, it was 4-3, Team GB.
There was a lot of hope, wasn't there?
You could hear Land of Hope and Glory pouring off Cleve Hill. It was getting quite exciting, but then in the end, We were walloped.
Willie Mullins again, was it 10 winners 10. In the end?
And it could have been more, because he had Galopander Shaw, he had Ballyburn, he had Madgebury, he had Kopeck De May, blew out in the last race.
Yes, but it was Irish domination again, although I think we performed respectably enough. For me, I think, I understand a lot of people who will have been on some of the short price favours won't have enjoyed last week, but I wrote a piece in the Weekender about what I wanted to happen for this year's Cheltenham Festival. And one of them was drama.
Yeah,
I was at the festival last year when we had Ballyburn and Fatafal both winning very uncompetitive, if we're honest, quite boring races. And I just didn't like that. I thought that's not what the festival should be about. Yes, it should be about great horses, but it should be about racing. And it was almost like a walkover in the end. And I got my drama. So I was very, very happy, Lee. I also thought, I was at the track. I tend to go on the Tuesday, and if I can go any other days, I will. But I was at the track on the Tuesday again this year, and I thought, fair play to Guy Lavender. I do think the race day experience was much improved. I thought the car park situation was much, much better than it has been in the past. Getting in and out was a lot quicker, a lot easier. I thought... admittedly, I got food quite early on in the day, but I thought food and drink was easier to come by. I thought getting in and out of where you needed to go and enclosures and things like that was much easier. And obviously, you want there to be high attendances at the Cheltenham Festival, but at the same time, I think it's nice when the facilities aren't too crammed and you can have a nice experience while having that atmosphere and that vibe. And I do think it was much more comfortable than it has been in the past. So I think they're the positives.
It's a trick on this, isn't it? I've written about this in my column, say. So if you disregard the 2021 as the 2022 is a post COVID spike year, you got 2023 had about 240,000, 2024 had about 230,000. This year we're on 219,000. The year before COVID was 251,000. So it's going the wrong way numbers wise, and that is hugely significant for the Jockey Club because it makes most of its money, or a big chunk of its money, from the Cheltenham Festival. And yet, picking up the themes that you raised there, Maddie, you spoke to racegoers last week And which everyone that I spoke to was saying we're having a much better time than we had last year. Aside from issues about the racing product and people moaning about, constantly moaning about too many odds on favourites, people saying they were getting a drink easier, they weren't struggling to get around, they were able to get on and off the courtesy buses without having to queue to get on one.
Yeah.
It was just a more pleasurable experience.
I thought the betting ring as well, was absolutely buzzing.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in a lot of things.
Well, that's because nobody can
have
a bet with a bookmaker anymore. Yeah. Who wants a bet? I mean, that's simple. The betting rings are starting to come back because...
the only positivity of...
Well, basically, if you're a punter, you can't afford to lose and you can't afford to win either.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much being told to go, you might as well go to the racetrack. It's the only place you can be able to get a bet on these days. That's how bad it's got.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to get any
better.
But
I do think that's a positive thing. I felt that.
Well, it's a positive thing. It's absolutely a positive thing for the ring. And I'm glad the ring, you know, because...
When the
exchanges came through years ago, you did worry about the ring, didn't you?
Absolutely.
And now it's just going to get stronger and stronger. It's just the reasons that it's getting stronger and stronger aren't so good for the sport. And that's if somebody doesn't rein in the gambling commission, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse, isn't it? It's as simple as that, because bookmakers don't want to stop losing punters from losing. It's as simple as that. They really don't. They are. You know, I'm not saying you shouldn't have some checks and balances with people, but by the same token, it has got to a point of ridiculousness. I heard of one bookmaker of the track having to ask for ID for less than 500 quid at the racetrack. It is crazy. As far as the Irish domination is concerned, it's a numbers game, isn't it? It is that simple, isn't it?
They're getting the raw material through.
There were 452 runners at Cheltenham, and 178 of them were trained by the top four trainers in Ireland.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, huge number. By comparison, 46 were trained by the top four trainers in Britain, if you kick out Willie Mullins, who's carried the top four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a massive
difference.
I think we
did quite well, if you consider that.
Henderson, Nicholson had two winners. Paul Nichols got on the score sheet. Dan Skelton got on the score sheet. The main British trainers.
Yeah, remember as well, two of the best novice chasers.
Ollie Murphy's in he was fourth. He's probably fifth now because Willie Mullins is in there. He only had three runners.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He still had a second and a fourth in two big field handicaps. So his horses have run bloody well for what he had. But I think part of the problem is that when it comes to the Irish, Willie Mullins in particular, right, they almost get first refusal on all these horses when it comes to the sales.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and the British trainers at the moment get what's left because the Irish have got all the buying power, right? And it doesn't matter how much, you know, how many horses you get, if you're not getting the right stock,
you're not going to win races.
You're 100%. Not going to win races. And if the right stock is not available to you, then it's not really your fault at the same time. Like, you know, and I think that is part of the problem. Your likes of Nichols, Skelton, Henderson, all that, they might have one or two big owners, and obviously Henderson does with the McManus and the Donnellys, but he doesn't get all their runners by any stretch of the imagination. No. Other trainers do, but a lot of the other trainers are relying on one or two that can spend a few quid on one or two, rather than can spend a lot of money on a load.
Yeah.
And I think the other problem being is that these, like I call them super owners, that are in Ireland, I don't think they care a monkey's about prize money. Right? And the problem is, what they want is success at the major meetings.
Particularly
at Cheltenham. Right? And they're prepared to buy it. And what that does is that inflates the prices for everybody else.
Yeah.
Right? And then the smaller owners are now having to pay way, way, way more. I mean, look, we all know that bloodstock has been the biggest false economy in the world for years and years and years. It's even worse now. You could probably knock 90% off the prices of all the horses sold and still not cover it with a year's prize money.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense. And a lot of people are thinking that and say, well, I'm not going to buy this anymore. I'm not going to buy so much anymore. I'm not going to spend so much anymore. So that is the problem. And it ain't going to change anytime soon.
No, I don't think it is. But, Lee, it is worth saying, and this is not in a comeback to your point, because your point's very true, but it could be that the best two novice chasers didn't turn up. The best two novice chasers, well, probably in Britain or Ireland, certainly in Britain, didn't turn up last week in Sergino and the Jukebox Man. Yeah. Not saying they would have won, but that was a big blow to our team. Yeah. And like Keel says, they are the anomaly rather than we don't have the strength in depth. We don't have the depth. And also, even across Ireland, there just aren't as many good horses around these days. And that's why we have such an issue with these more races, and also the way that horses are campaigned, they're not run as often as they used to be. You know, what was it, Flaky Dove? Did she run something like 13 times before her big win at Cheltenham?
Well, that's why I was doubly pleased to see Bob Honours to beat Tia Poo, really, because he's only run once, and I hate that. Now, I know I made money out of Jimmy DeSoy, who haven't run at all, but I'd still rather those horses didn't win.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Just you mentioned about Sergino and missing Sergino. Thank goodness they made the race programme changes, because we only had in the two Grade 1 novice chases 12 runners across
none in
two
the Brown
races.
Advisory, was
no British, well, the fields only 12 runners across those two races, so no British in the Brown Advisory. But if there'd been the 2 mile four full on Grade 1 novice chase, yes, you might have had a few from the novice handicap dropping into those races. But it underlines.
Well, Django Bay would have run it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
But the general race changes that they made, make the National Hunt Chase a novice handicap, make the Grade 1 novice chase over 2.5 miles a novice handicap, the cross country as a handicap.
But cross country proved that it worked really well, because I thought Stumptown was the best horse, but I thought, oh, is that too much weight for him? And I think he proved if you are a proper horse, you will be able to defy the weight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And what about the false starts?
So kick the mares out, bin the bumpers, and we're nearly there.
I suggested a few weeks ago to. Slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also not, is we could get rid of the Turner's novice hurdle as well. Just have the Supreme and
that one's been around for years, that one's an original race, as far as I'm concerned.
I couldn't get rid of it.
Too many good horses are running that over the years for me to say get rid of that.
No, man, you're not going to win that one.
We're not having that.
No, I agree. The full starts. How do we solve the problem, the full starts?
Well, I'm not sure. Look, at the end of the day, it got ridiculous. I mean, the start of the Ultima, it just should have gone. I mean, you know, everybody. I don't know anybody who didn't think it was not perfect. I mean, the problem is if you want them to line up right next to each other all the way across and all be moving in at the same speed, you might as well put stalls down there, because it's a waste of time trying to get it absolutely perfect. Right, as long as they're all pointing in the right direction and they're moving forward, then bloody hell, let them go. Nobody would moan that much. Mm. As long as they're all moving in the same direction, let them go.
Yeah.
I mean, horses that are at the back, when they're coming in for the first time, that's generally where they want to be, rather than when you had a standing start, the ones want to be at the front and suddenly they've planted and suddenly they are at the back.
It's not a natural thing to ask a horse to do over, I know they do it on the flat, but not over jumps. Once you've had one false start, to get once they, you know, their adrenaline is up and they're ready and raring to go, it's just not a natural thing to say, right, and also the tape. Do we need a tape? You know, I think that's quite a flighty. I mean, we saw what Maureen did at the start of the whip round, whether that was to do with the tape or not. But I just think with that many horses in a big handicap, you're asking a heck of a lot for them to all stand still the right way and then be able to accelerate and go at the same speed.
I heard someone suggest foam, but it's not like a football match, is it? I mean, by the time you've got it all lined up, the foam's disappeared again, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean?
But I think I know they got rid of the concept of just doing a turn and do another running start. You know, I don't like the standing starts. I think that's the issue.
Yeah.
I do understand if the jockeys aren't heeding the start, they have to respect the starter.
Of course, yeah.
But as Keith Donoghue said, the communication was not clear, because sometimes he was letting them go and sometimes he wasn't. And I think there needs to be conversations had off the back of this for who was at fault. But personally, if it was me, get rid of the standing starts. Tell them to go all the way back and trot in and just let the momentum carry them. And also, you know, show a bit of discretion. If there's some horses who need to go a bit faster because they're on a bend and they need to get round the bend, that's fair, isn't it?
I'm presuming as well, get rid of them sort of trotting in around a bend into the start, because that just seems daft, because the people on the outside are having to go faster than the inside, so they are going to get revs up.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. It was good though, wasn't it? It was good. It was a good Cheltenham Festival.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
The
racing itself was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was so much. There was plenty of drama. There were top class performances. You know what I mean? And there are loads of things that left you shaking your head afterwards.
That's
you know what I mean?
And I loved it.
That's what you like about sport.
I think.
Wouldn't it be boring if all the jollies won?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of punters out there who would massively disagree with that, but but I'm not one of them. I just, you know, upsets are part and parcel of sport, aren't they?
Of course they are.
You know, and it was great.
I agree with that. Selfishly and not selfishly, I wanted my drama whether I won or not, but I do think the meeting tails off a bit towards the end.
Okay.
I think the Friday card for me is a bit of a damp
squib.
Apart from the Gold Cup.
Apart from the Gold Cup.
I agree with that. There's four I mean, you've got to talk about how many people have watched. So many people take days off, which is why. I mean, okay, I know we're looking at the bookmaker element of this, but the money does flow back into the sport. If people are betting on the races, almost all of the races on the Friday are the biggest betting races of the week and of the year. So, you know, there's only two handicaps. Why don't we stick another handicap on? There's four handicaps on Thursday, for instance.
Yeah, it's a bit of jiggling
around.
You know
around. What I mean? Yeah. Bit of jiggling around.
I just don't think even as race out anyway, a spectacle, but, it just doesn't.
Well, yeah, put another big field handicap on there on the telly. Why not? And just jazz it up a little bit.
Higher quality big field handicap.
So a closing thought there to end our discussion on the Cheltenham Festival.
And keep nagging the hotels to cut their prices.
Oh God, yeah, some obscene price in the hotels. Keels, thank you. Maddie, thank you. Thank you for watching. The Grand National will be along soon as well. And so too, you know, will the 2026 Cheltenham Festival. Much more, though, before then. Bye-bye.